X-12. Number 1B.
And so he says, really what we do is not something good. It's something bad. Because we tempt the patient to postpone the solution of his inner troubles. All what we do is either through an injection or by giving pills and so on to help him not to solve what he should solve. To postpone the real healing, to postpone the real reformation of man. He says, well, it is said that medicine has achieved that longevity has increased. He says, yes, that's true. But he says it has increased morbidity, because we only have increased longevity by making more patients chronic patients. And he says this has become now the great problem in medicine, that the chronics are becoming a great percentage of all the patients. He speaks about that 50% of all the patients are chronics. So again, he feels that really medicine is not giving the real success and the real solution. He says, do drugs really heal? He says, just look at the number of drugs there are. There are 30,000 different drugs. And he says, if some of them would be very efficient, we wouldn't need the rest of them. But the very fact that there are so many is a proof that they are not worth anything. Well, not worth anything, that they are not worth very much. That they are not really effective. So that the high number of drugs show the ineffectiveness of those drugs. You see, that's quite different with the antibiotics. There you have just two or three, and with those they can apply it and have their healings. He says the problem is the chronics. He says we can really prevent people from dying, but we cannot heal them. We have no lasting healings. These patients, after they have been dismissed, come again after a few months with the same disease or with another disease, because the cause of disease has not been tackled. It's quite interesting then further to see how psychosomatic medicine begins to see that a disease is always a unique disease. That it cannot be just classified into various diseases and therefore be treated in that category. But that every disease is the individual's disease. That's why so many people speak about my disease, my heart trouble, my thing, my that. It's always their personal property. He says that they have now 30,000 different Krankheitsbilder, 30,000 different illnesses registered to treat. And it shows that that number goes up and up, because everyone has a different disease. And so they begin to see that each one should be treated differently. And there they begin to see the great problem, because, as you know, the medical people today have only about 8 minutes time for each patient, according to statistics. Well, if everyone has a different disease, and on the other side, the doctor cannot care individually with each one of them, there is that great divergency coming in, which just makes the medical profession very difficult. They have developed what they call the organ language. They have begun to see that what in ancient times perhaps in a natural way, people felt intuitively, has some good groundings, that the language of a people indicates very much the psychological cause of it, of a trouble. For instance, when people say in a situation, oh, it nearly broke my heart, that perhaps afterwards they get heart trouble. So the organ responds to that inward feeling a man or a patient has. Or you know that one or the other may say, oh, it took my breath away. And he may have afterwards difficulty in breathing or asthma or the like. It made my blood boil and you have high pressure, see. So there is that correspondence in some way, there is no rule in it, in some way, between the psychological reaction which comes first and then how the organ reacts on that. It got something under my skin or so, and you have irritation and skin trouble and so on. Well, I was asking an English friend and said, could you give me some examples in English, because we have a wonderful list in German, you know, for every organ we have one, for the kidney and for the bladder and for the galls and so on. And so this English friend said to me, no, we don't have that because we are too polite. The heart gets in and the breath, but afterwards that's taboo. Yes. Another point which is very interesting to see and which collaborates with the text that we are going to take in Science and Health is that they begin to see that magic, that old magic, is playing a great part in the modern life of the people. That we have not outgrown the magical age. That we think that we are so rational and that we can think so clearly and that we are high above superstition and certainly high above magic. And the investigations they have made in psychosomatic medicine has shown that there is a great amount of magical beliefs still in the people. Perhaps we would say there is still a great amount of mortal mind lingering in mortal consciousness. They begin to see that, as we know, that magic really has the same etymological origin as might. Magic means to have power over, to have might over. And so, what has might over the patient? And what gives might to a drug? What gives might and power to a doctor and to a medical treatment? And they have investigated that and found out that most is just based on magic. For instance, the magical power of a drug. They see that if a drug is new, that it is more potent than a very old one. That if a drug comes from abroad, America usually, that it is much better than from home. That if it is very expensive, that it is certainly more effective. That if the packing is well done and attracting and suggestive, that the drug is more powerful. That the name, if the name is attractive and clicks and is catching, that it is more powerful. They even find out that the same drug given as an injection has much more effect than given as pills, because the very fact of giving an injection has still that magic sense in it of something going on which the patient cannot understand and which is for him unknown, and so he has a greater respect for of it. That the application of mechanical apparatus and so on act very much as a healing power. He tells of many cases of farmers, of simple people coming, and he takes them under the X-ray just to see what's the trouble with them, and they get out, come out from the X-ray machine, and they feel just better and thank the doctor and say, well, that treatment was wonderful, I feel already much better. But he goes even further and says that the doctor of today or always was really is regarded more or less as a magician by the patient. That the patient, he subjugates himself entirely to the doctor. The patient, even if he's an intelligent man, he goes to the doctor, but because he doesn't know anything about his body and about the disease, he subjugates his own will, his own thinking, to that of the doctor and to the decision of the doctor. And so the decision of the doctor, even his words, the way he looks at him, if he looks very serious and very, in a grave way, you see, that makes an enormous impression on the patient and already begins to act as a magic power, naturally in the opposite way than the healing. It depresses him. He shows how in many cases just a word or just a prediction from the doctor has brought about the very disease which the doctor has predicted, even if it was 30 or 40 years later. So that the word of a doctor is really the last word. It's power. See, and as in original time, the word and power were more or less the same. He spoke the word and it was done. And so in the magic age, this is the same thing. He says something also which is very interesting for us. He says that the healings which are being accomplished on this magical basis in modern medicine, that is the healing in the belief in the medicine, the belief in the doctor, the belief in the treatment, that if it is done on that basis, that there is a great amount of magical belief still in the patient, that these healings are much quicker than the others. You see, some correlation with what Mrs. Eddy says, that faith healing is sometimes much quicker than scientific healing. That it is quicker, that it is easier, but also what Mrs. Eddy says about faith healing, that it is only transitional. That they can always see that these people come back after a while with the same or with another disease. How could they find out? To put another question, how could they find out that there is a magic residue in us, in the patient? They could find it out by those what medical science calls placebo. You know what placebo is? They are unmedicated pellets. By giving these unmedicated pellets to patients and seeing how they react in comparison to the same kind of patients who get the real drug, they can find out how much magic there still is in the patient, how much belief there is in the patient. Statistically, they have found out that 40% of the patients react on anything they give them. But 40% react anyway, whatever you give them. So that the drug doesn't mean a thing, what you give them. They react anyway. So that 40% of, say, the main body of patients has a great residue of magical belief in themselves. They can find that also out by these tests. For instance, with headaches, they found out that with placebo, they could heal 60% of the patient. It's a very high percentage. That with tranquilizers, they could heal 30 to 40%. As a matter of fact, only a few months ago in Zurich, they made some experiments with students at the university, and they found out that more students reacted on placebo than on the real drug. So one can see how very strongly the belief of the patient is a healing factor. But is only the belief of the patient a healing factor? They say no, also the belief of the doctor is a healing factor. Even he has that magic belief in himself. How could they find out that? By making those double-blind tests. I don't know if you know what that means. In a double-blind test, you give to the patient a placebo. The patient doesn't know, that's the first blind test, the patient doesn't know that he gets only a placebo, and the doctor doesn't know that he gives a placebo. That's the double. And they found out that when both don't know, that the effect of these unmedicated pellets are even greater than if only the patient knows it. So that there is also a magic power alone vested in the belief of the doctor that what he is doing is right. That his conviction that he's going to heal somebody is alone doing it without a real drug or medicament or medicine. So we can see that more and more medicine is finding out that their healing is really based to the great extent on the belief of the patient. The belief of the patient in the drug, the belief of the patient in the doctor, the belief of the patient in the way of treatment, and also vested in the belief of the doctor treating the patient. They made experiments to further clarify the situation by trying to see what sort of patient reacts more on placebo than others. And they found out that those who react more on placebo are those patients who are churchgoers. Those who are emotionally unsteady. Those who feel well cared in the hospital, they react better. And they found out that those who have a critical mind, you see, who have come out of the magical age much more, who have taken on a more scientific thought, that the critical thinkers and all of the stubborn ones, those who don't believe everything the first time you tell them something, those who are holding their emotions under control, that they react very little on placebo. So again, we can see how very much the human mortal consciousness is a factor in medical healing. Then he says, among others, well, if that is so, then couldn't we say that the whole pharmaceutical industry is only producing placebo? And they are producing great profits, and it's good to have some shares of them. But that's think of what that comes to. If they come to the point that all those 30,000 drugs they are producing are more or less only placebo, because the effect is anyway, in any way, mostly dependent on mortal consciousness, on the belief. I think I want to make a break here.